Welcome to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability. Your hosts are Bill Reed and John Becker, co-authors of the Integrative Design Guide to Green Building. This program will help you take sustainability to the next level. Here are your hosts, Bill Reed and John Becker.
Hello, everyone, again. This is John Becker.
And Bill Reed.
And welcome to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability. So let's see, Bill, where were we last time?
Well, we were introducing, and we were told by a few people that we were a little abstract, perhaps, but this is a Building Deeper Green program. However, we don't want to leave people in the dust. We were talking about the nature of systems and the nature of what green design was, where it came from, the concept of green design. Today we want to unpack that with more detail, and in particular we're going to try to keep it at an accessible level. We'd love to hear from you if it is or it isn't. John?
Well, with that said, what I think we're going to try and do today is discuss briefly what are systems and understanding what those are, but then move into what's the difference between technical systems and living systems, both of which are part of what we do when we're engaging green buildings, hopefully. And then how are those systems nested within larger systems? And then we'll see where it goes for the last segment, but likely end up with a discussion that talks about how we can keep this from being, you know, squishy and how it actually applies to...
Well, the real world of architecture.
Yeah,
and
hopefully
building.
we can feed in some... examples from both of our work. Bill, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that we need to give some people who may be new to this a bit of a context. John and I are both architects and have been working in the green building movement from the early 90s, mid-90s, in terms of working with the U.S. Green Building Council and the LEED rating system. And you might be asking the question, well, what the heck do systems have to do with getting LEED? Or what the heck do systems have to do with green buildings? And in fact, it's been our experience that one cannot really engage in a discussion of sustainability, and therefore green buildings, without understanding the nature of systems and how they work. And in fact, it is the idea that we don't understand systems as a culture, we aren't taught about systems as a culture, that we believe has put us in the problem, in our situation where we have to actually be talking about green buildings in the first place.
Well, and when we look at green buildings, what we're really trying to address are systems. And in fact, LEED is structured around some pretty clear systems, in that LEED talks about dealing with sites, water, energy, materials, and indoor environmental quality. And Bill, last time you had introduced the four primary elements from The Alchemist, remember?
Oh, well, earth, wind, fire, and water.
Right, and when we translate those into four key subsystems, we might be talking about habitat, meaning both natural and human habitat as one, water, energy, and materials.
Okay, well, I think we might have just lost some people already. We got to stop. Let's talk about the word systems. And then we can put these in context.
Well, and then to understand systems, we need to understand fragments. So really what we're trying to talk about is dealing with both fragments and systems.
So okay, so let's define a system. First of all, we're pretty comfortable as a culture talking about transportation systems and lighting systems and mechanical systems and, I don't know, what's even more common, communication systems. So what's a system then? We use the term pretty loosely. The definition of a system is pretty simple. There are actually three parts to it. The first two are pretty common, are fairly commonly understood. The first aspect of a system is that it's made of parts, pieces.
Fragments.
Yeah, yeah. Those pieces, though, are put into relationship to each other. So in a car, we have a piston, a carburetor, and a steering wheel, and tires, and they're put into relationship with each other to create something that has a purpose, which is the third aspect of a system. So you have the pieces of the car that are in relationship to each other, and there's a purpose for those pieces. So if you had a bunch of car parts sitting on the floor in your living room, and you were told, put that together, unless you knew the purpose for those car parts, you'd probably have a pretty hard time figuring what to do with those pieces. So pieces in interrelationship for a purpose. And those three are pretty important to hang on to as we go through this episode, and even into the further episodes downstream of this.
So if we're talking about buildings, then, those pieces are pretty easy to identify, right, Bill? I mean, we've got, for example, some of the pieces would be, let's say, lighting fixtures, and they are part of an electrical system because the lighting fixture is one piece attached to a larger system for the purpose of providing power and light in the building for occupant use.
Right.
But what gets interesting is that the building, and these are technical systems, so the building has a whole bunch of these technical systems, right? I mean,
yeah, and that's what makes it so hard to deal with. What we've done, well, let's name them. We have elevator systems and escalator systems. We have an envelope system around the building. We have window systems.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe we keep it really simple and just mention the big ones.
Okay.
There's the building envelope system, and by the way, all that means really is what are the walls, windows, roofs made out of? In other words, what's enclosing the space in the building? So that's the envelope system, right? And then we have the heating, cooling, and ventilating system, which is often referred to as HVAC, right? And then we have the electrical system, and then we have the plumbing system. And the plumbing system deals with all of the plumbing fixtures in the building, as well as how is rainwater conveyed from the roof, etc. So those are the big ones. Are there any others you think?
Well, there's plenty. Well, there's landscape. Then we go outside the site. Landscape systems, and there's community systems, and there's transportation systems, and there's water systems like streams, and there's habitat, animals and plants, and all those are part of life.
Well, what's really interesting is that even though if we just look at the building for a moment without even looking at connection to site systems, even within each of those four or five major systems we just mentioned, there are subsystems. So, for example, within the HVAC system, you've got a whole system devoted to cooling. You've got a whole other system devoted to ventilation and a whole other one devoted to heating. And then within each of those, there are smaller components of the system. So, for example, heating, you've got the boiler, you've got the ductwork, you've got the registers that allow the air, if it's an air system, to distribute the air into the building.
Okay, I'm going to jump in on there. Now, it's sounding pretty complicated.
Hmm.
And this is exactly the crux of the matter. It's so complicated that what we've done as a society is that we've got to put all these in an assembly line approach. So we're going to have specialists, like a mechanical engineer.
Oh, you mean like each of these is being designed in a linear way?
Well, yeah, in separate offices even. So you have an electrical engineer and a mechanical engineer, and you have a landscape architect, and you have an architect, and you have a master planner, and you may have a transportation engineer. And who else? You have an interior designer. You have a contractor. You'll have a lawyer. You'll have the bankers. All those many different folks are involved in the building, and they're all working in conventional ways.
Well, let's see when you say conventional, do you mean the process? I think you do, and it's a linear process, right? I mean, how do we design it?
So talk more about linear, John.
Well, I'm thinking, Bill, we're both architects, and we did this for years and years before we learned differently. How do we normally design a building, right? You or I, as the architect, meet with the owner, and we come up with a program, which is a list of spaces, how big they are, what functions need to happen within them. You or I and our team, then, as the architects, sit and solve the problem. Over a series of iterations, could take weeks, could take months, depending on how complex it is, and we now have a solution in terms of everything being in the right place, the right size, and it looks good, right?
Hopefully.
So you, the architect, and me, if I'm the owner, we agree, okay, yep, that's what we want. So then, and I did this for, oh boy, way too many years, I would then take that set of drawings that we had created and send them off to the mechanical engineer and the electrical engineer and the structural engineer and the civil engineer, on and on, each of whom would design their own system, just like what we talked about, but in complete isolation. Now, these guys are really, really good at optimizing their system, meaning...
All right, there's a word. There's a word check.
Okay, optimize.
Optimize.
Go ahead.
So optimize means to make the best use of. That's the dictionary definition. But really what they're trying to do is to find synergy. How can you actually put these different pieces together so they actually are working more effectively and more efficiently?
But only within their own...
That's right, within their own sphere of influence.
Yeah, and that's where the rub happens, right? Because they can make their system work really great in isolation, because essentially what happens is none of these different engineers and or the architect are really talking with each other. So none of the potential synergies between systems are ever really discovered. And then at the end, all these different separate engineers' drawings are sent back to the architect, who ostensibly integrates them, but really coordinating. On a good day, that means that ducts don't run into structure, etc., and then puts the drawings out to bid for a whole other set of guys to try and understand it to build it, right?
So what happens now in when we realize that we've been very fat and sloppy, fat and happy about how to do these buildings because we've had free energy. It didn't matter if the architect could orient a building facing due west where the sun is really intense when it sets at night and it bakes the building. The building becomes a solar oven. All the engineer needed to do was to add another 60 tons of air conditioning, another big air conditioning system, to make the building work. Well, that's expensive. It's also creating climate change because of the carbon.
Why did he have to add that big system?
Well, because the architect decided they wanted to have this view, and all those windows created a solar oven like a greenhouse.
So the architect was designing their system, and the engineer is designing his system, and instead of looking for synergies, it was just, well, I'm stuck with this, so I've got to make a bigger cooling system.
Right, and the engineer couldn't talk to the architect because the architect was in charge, and the engineer wasn't being paid enough anyway to even if the architect's ego would let him or her engage, the engineer's left saying, okay, we'll just throw some more air conditioning at it, which costs a lot of money, and it also costs a lot of energy.
Well, and you know what? The process gets even worse because now it gets constructed by a set of construction professionals who had nothing to do with the design. And that's even worse. In other words, that process we just talked about, from the day programming happens to the day that construction documents are put out on the street for contractors to bid, is often a year-long process that involves hundreds of people. In essence, hundreds of thousands of person hours of information. Contractors are given about a week to understand all that. Well, 4 weeks, but it really only takes a week. So in essence, we are awarding the projects to the team that has the construction professionals who have given us the least cost, which essentially translates into understanding least what was intended.
Okay, so we're going to let's hold on that now, because we're going into a break, and we will pick up this story, because it's really an important story to understand, because in understanding it, we can then begin to address sustainability as it really is intended to be addressed. See you in a minute.
Are you a wildfire survivor? Do you need help but don't know where to turn? SoCalHelp.org is a place you can go to get immediate help with food, shelter, important medications, and start getting your life back on track. Get help now with insurance, legal issues, and find professional help like doctors and counselors. You can also connect with other survivors and people who can help. For the answers and support you need to rebuild, visit SoCalHelp.org.
Many designers are adapting their design process. They are developing methods to address the environmental impact of their work. Graphic, industrial, interior, architectural, landscape, identity, and fashion designers share a common experience. By revealing the thought processes of people from a wide range of design disciplines, your understanding of sustainable design strategies will deepen. Join us every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, for Design Evolution on the Green Talk Network.
America is facing a skilled workforce shortage. SkillsUSA can help. What is SkillsUSA?
SkillsUSA is life-changing.
SkillsUSA is awesome.
SkillsUSA is one of the biggest opportunities life can give you.
SkillsUSA is amazing.
SkillsUSA is motivating.
SkillsUSA specifically prepares you for the workforce.
SkillsUSA empowers students to connect with a network of people, starting with their classmates, to their advisors, to other people in their states. SkillsUSA allows students to connect with business and industry, to manage their education, and to really get a feel of the real world. I'm doing something now that's going to be applicable in the real world, and those skills are going to be useful today in school and in 5 years when I'm working and for the rest of my life.
SkillsUSA champions at work.
On the web at skillsusa.org.
At the Green Talk Network, our experts want to hear your voice. Do you have a question or comment for our hosts? Call us toll-free, 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. The Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to John Becker and
Bill Reed
on Building Deeper Green on the Green Talk Network of Voice America. Where we left off, we were talking about the story of how we design and build our buildings, and essentially it's a linear process fragmented between all of the different folks involved, and then bifurcated, separated by an abyss, actually, between the design professionals and the construction professionals. So
John, let me just interject here.
Yeah.
So the world of what we typically hear in the media about green design, and actually from many designers and architects as well, is that sustainability is about technical pieces, efficient light bulbs, more efficient mechanical systems, making the building envelope more heavily insulated. And all that is important, but it's so easy to talk about a piece of technology as a solution because you can put technology into sound bites. They actually can show photographs of them and pictures so that the press actually gives a very incomplete picture of what's necessary. Now, remember, we started out with the definition of systems, that they're the elements, right? And the elements are really what most people talk about. What we're moving into now is how we actually begin to delve into the relationships between those elements. Okay, John.
Yeah, and then last time, of course, remember, we were talking about products and technologies, tools, process, and then mindset shift. What we're really focusing on here, I think, though, is process. So one way to understand this, we'll call it fragmented process, is to really understand that a building is nothing more than a product. It just happens to be a very expensive one, probably the most expensive any of us buys in our lifetime, right? Bill, have you spent more on anything else than a building?
barely. So even a house. Now imagine an office building or a convention center.
Yeah. So here's to me what really makes this very clear to me is that take a look at any product in the room where you are right now, right? You know, there's probably a chair and a table and a light fixture, the shirt you're wearing, the computer in front of you, the phone that you're holding. Every one of those is a product. But what's really interesting is every one of those products was designed and constructed by the same entity. In which case, there is already an integration between design and construction. What we're talking about in terms of most building practices is that the designers and the builders are two entirely separate entities. Furthermore, they're actually under contract to perform as adversaries. So how can we do this differently?
So how do we make the architect...
I guess there's two questions there. How can we do this differently? But what's the result? Well, the result is what you just said, right, Bill? You've got an HVAC system that's probably generally twice as big as it needs to be because the engineers aren't talking with the architects or each other, and then the builder hasn't understood, because he hasn't been part of the team, what the purpose is.
Yeah, let me actually, this is kind of a bit of a horror story, but we did a survey of office buildings in Washington, D.C. in the mid-90s and found out that every office building we visited had twice the air conditioning capacity than they needed. In fact, the facilities operator said that these 50% of the equipment never was ever turned on. And the reason it was so large is that people assumed that they had to have extra capacity because that would sell the building better. And the architects wanted to cover themselves, and the engineers wanted to cover themselves, and it was a safety factor issue all the way down. And so hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, were spent for something that's never been used because we're not thinking as a system. We're not understanding how these pieces and the even the desires of the leasing agents and the tenants are part of the system.
So not only is it that the pieces themselves are bigger, hence costing more and using more resources, but generally, when they are running, they're consuming more energy, and of course, all of the environmental impacts associated with burning the fossil fuels to create that energy, right?
Yep. So what do we mean by optimizing a system?
Well, I think we're actually talking about looking for the mutually beneficial interrelationships between systems. In other words, what synergies happen between them? So, Bill, let's talk about a couple examples.
You want me to talk about the house example?
Yeah, talk about a house example.
All right, well, this is pretty straightforward. This is actually an example. It's a fusion of two different stories, but it illustrates the point well. So there's a house in a residential builder in the Denver, Colorado area wanted to create an energy-efficient house. And the first thing that one does at all in creating energy efficiency is you look at the weakest link. And the weakest link is the envelope. And in the envelope of the building, that means your sheathing and your siding, but the weakest link in that envelope are the windows. Windows basically just dump energy outside of them through leaking and through very poor insulating qualities. Now, the first reaction that people have about green building is it's too expensive. And this is an example to show you that, in fact, it doesn't have to be. So pay close attention.
Wait, you're saying that green buildings and greenhouses don't have to be more expensive?
That's the premise.
Say more.
Okay. So the first thing they looked at, in fact, I'll make even another premise. It is actually cheaper to save 40% energy than it is to save 20% energy.
Ah, we've made the same discovery.
So the first thing that people look at is, well, let's make, instead of double-glazed windows, let's put double-glazed low-emissivity windows. And that's just a metal sputtered coating on the inner pane of a window to make it more efficient to bounce energy back into the room, essentially. So that was going to add about $700 to the price of the house, which at the time was about $165,000. Now, $700 cost for a $165,000 house doesn't seem like much, but that's very valuable margin and profit to a developer. It's a tough business developing homes. So they said, even worse, it was about 30 years before they would pay back that investment due to energy efficiency.
So, well, I bet that guy said, no way.
No way. So it's not. But so the consultants that were working with this group, I think it was Amory Lovins was one, David Johnston of What's Working was another fellow, said, try to put in triple-glazed, argon-filled windows. Now, Amory Lovins has an expression called tunneling through the cost barrier. And, of course, triple-glazed, argon-filled windows, very highly insulating windows.
And a lot more expensive than the others.
Cost about $2,000 more, and, of course, the developer was going apoplectic on that one. So
things just got worse.
Right. So how can this possibly be? Well, the whole thing is you have to actually question every assumption. Systems thinking requires you to say, what have we done in the past? And if we've done it in the past one way, if we do it different now, what does that mean? What's connected to it? What are the relationships from that window? Now, the windows...
Actually, you know what, Bill? Right there is a great place to interject the mantra. If something costs more, the first question that we ask is, what other systems are impacted?
Right. What's connected? What are the relationship to those pieces in the building? Well, a window has a bunch of different relationships. You can see out of it. It takes sun in. It leaks air. The type of glasses in the window can either break or be tempered to avoid shrapnel. You have blinds and curtains associated with windows, UV degradation on your furniture, a whole bunch of things. What's that?
Get to the point. What's enough?
Okay. So the window can one of the things about a window is that it has this new window, this $2,000 extra bunch of windows actually have better insulating qualities than walls did in homes built in the 1960s.
What other system does that impact?
Well, every home in the Intermountain West and the Northeast United States where we have cold winters has a radiator or a air register above or below it to bathe that window. And the reason those radiators are there is because the window feels cold and it's leaking air. So if this window now, these new windows are more highly insulated than walls were in the 1960s, why do we need a radiator or a register? And in fact, you don't.
Yeah, those are perimeter heating systems.
You know? Right, around the edge of the house. So basically all the ductwork on the first and second floors that was taken in to supply those registers was taken into the center of the house just as a vertical supply and return, and that saved the developer not only the $2,000, it saved the developer $3,500, which allowed them to pay for extra insulation. So not only did they get better windows and insulating the walls more completely, they were able to do it for free because they were able to get rid of that ductwork.
Actually, better than free, right?
Well, then it gets better because not only they didn't need a big boiler anymore. A $4,000 boiler was able to be removed because the house was so well insulated, they didn't need that capacity. And they went to a quick recovery hot water heater. They then also went to an air-to-air heat exchanger in order to create fresh air for the house, which added a little bit of money. But it all netted out. When you subtracted all the cost of the removed ductwork, the removed boiler, the increased the high quick recovery hot water heater, and the air-to-air heat exchanger, they were $2,000 less than the price of a conventional house without those features.
Okay, so you get a house that costs less, uses less energy, and is more comfortable.
Right. So what's not to like?
What's not to like? Well, how come
we don't do that? How come we don't do that all the time? That's the question people ask.
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. One is we pretty much put prices on houses in larger buildings because, by the way, the same exact story occurs in large commercial buildings. And our story is, and we went to our developer and said, look, we want to install better windows, and they're going to cost more. He said, I can't afford it, so we couldn't do it, until, of course, we made the argument, just like you did, for the house. But the problem is, generally speaking, we don't look at the costs of bundled systems. We look at the costs of
individual
components of a system individually.
Right. And those are the prices the contractors give you. And if the windows are too expensive, we have to get rid of them. We don't take the time in the design process. And remember, one of the things we left last week, to do different things, we have to do things differently. And one of the things that we have to do differently in the design process is take the time to look at the system interrelationships between the pieces and buildings so that we can understand how we can optimize and create synergies between them. Sustainability is not about technologies only. It's also about how we actually put these different pieces in relationship to each other.
So to close this out, one way I think we can understand this very easily is a little bit of a metaphor. What we need to do is think of our buildings as organisms. And a good way to think about that is think about your body, right? You've got all these different systems, immune system, respiratory, circulatory system, all working in concert. Well, maybe the HVAC system in a building is its respiratory system, and maybe the circulatory system is its electrical system. And they all impact each other. So that could be a way to start talking about living systems, but it's time to take a break, and we'll come back and chat about that. You're listening to
Building Deeper Green
on Voice America. Stay tuned.
What can you tell me about SkillsUSA?
SkillsUSA teaches you employability skills. So you know how to deal with people, you have teamwork, your resume is going to look awesome.
Well, it's important to know your technical skills, but not only that, to have soft skills, the skills of learning how to communicate with people.
SkillsUSA.
On the web at skillsusa.org.
Can we recognize our world not as a commodity, but as a sacred creation that will support us best the more creatively we live on it? Green Visions is all about how a spirit of innovation and pleasure can be brought into solving our environmental problems. Join your host, Carolyn North, each week as she talks about what citizens of the world are doing to make a difference. Heal the planet, heal yourself, and have a good time doing it. Tune in to Green Visions with Carolyn North every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Green Talk Network.
Hey, y'all, this is Stephen Cochran. As a country artist, I have traveled around this great country of ours, often meeting our brave men and women in uniform. And as a Marine and veteran of both the Iraq and Afghan conflict, I know how important it is to thank our troops who defend our freedom each and every day. One of the best ways to thank them is to give their children and spouses the gift of education. Scholarships for 2 years, 4 years, and vocational school. This is exactly what a national charity, Thanks USA, does. Please go to their website, www.thanksusa.org, to make a generous donation to the Thanks USA Scholarship Fund for the families of the troops, and I thank you.
Keep listening to the Green Talk Network for the latest in the sustainability and green movement for all of our futures, today and tomorrow. The Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Building Deeper Green with Bill Reed
and John Becker.
So, John, you started off, you ended it with talking about the building as an organism. So, why don't you keep that analogy going?
Well, when you catch a cold and your immune system is subdued or jeopardized, does that have an impact on your respiratory system?
Sure.
Well, sure. And maybe even your circulatory system and maybe even your digestive system, right? So what we're saying is exactly the same thing happens in buildings. The difference is that whatever you believe in created the human body, a building is created by a whole bunch of separate, bifurcated, fragmented professionals, each working on each one of those systems separately with very little connection between them. Hence, it is no surprise that, for the most part, our buildings cost more than they need to, don't function real well, and in fact consume a whole lot of energy and other resources that is fundamentally unnecessary.
So, if we're talking about sustainability, the engineer alone can't solve the problem. The architect alone can't solve the problem. It has to be a team, including the client.
Nor can the builder. I mean, none of these guys or ladies alone can hold the complexity of all the systems that we started with mentioning about buildings in one mind. It's just too complex anymore, right?
So the different things that we need to be doing to actually achieve something different in building performance and green design requires that the people that are doing the building are in relationship to each other so they can put the systems they're in charge of in relationship to each other. And that requires a different process. So John talked about the body as a...
Wait a minute. You're saying then that it's not just the pieces, the technical systems in the building that need to be in relationship. It's the people designing them that need to be in a relationship.
Right.
Both.
Absolutely. So it's a whole system. Where we ended up the last episode is the idea of the difference between a system or a subsystem and a whole system. We've been talking about, people use the word system very loosely. We talk about the mechanical system, but in fact that mechanical system is a subsystem. Or we talk about the respiratory system in a body, but in fact that's a subsystem. Really what we're talking about is the whole system of the body. If we're not looking at the whole, if medical practices are only treating your liver, for instance, but that's not, your heart is sick, you're not going to be well.
Ah, yes, the old high-performance liver on a table.
We build our buildings. Elizabeth Sartoris, the evolutionary biologist, talks about building high-performance livers, and that we basically, these buildings isolated from the larger context within which they sit are isolated. Just as those systems are isolated. So a whole system, where do we draw the boundary between these subsystems and a whole system? So
well, what's now a whole you're system? Making a bridge between technical systems and living systems.
Well, let's talk. So talk about what's more whole, John. Where do we go out from a building?
Well, up until now, we've really limited our discussion so far, Bill, with what are the technical systems within the building. Well, what's interesting is a building is never in isolation. Where is it? Well, it's on a site somewhere, right? Whether it be in downtown Boston or downtown Seattle or out in the middle of the farmland of central Pennsylvania.
Right. So, and that building can't work without fuel oil or natural gas.
Air.
Water. Certainly air. Certainly the sun.
So there,
and the people going into it. What was that? Sorry.
Transportation. How do you get to it and back? Right.
Right.
How do you get things into the building? I mean, look. Why are we building buildings? Well, we're building buildings to house people. Yeah. So those people have to get to the building and back. So in essence, there are all these flows into a building and out of a building. And that has to do with the site upon which the building sits. So,
well, not only are there flows, there are also exchanges going on. There's air being breathed. There's food being processed. There's waste being released. There's whether it's human waste or occupant, you know, paper and cardboard boxes.
So there's flows and nutrients, et cetera, flowing into the building, and there's stuff flowing out of the building, right?
Yep.
Okay, so when we talk about these systems, we've pretty much outlined the technical systems. So when you talk about living systems, what do you mean? What does that mean? What are we trying to sustain, I guess, is really the question.
Yeah, what is sustainability about? And various answers were given in the presentations we make, and some people say, well, we're trying to sustain energy. Well, don't worry, energy's not going away. We have the sun. That's, there's a lot of energy from there. So I'm not just trying to make energy more efficient.
We use it very well.
What's that?
Yeah, we just don't use it very well.
No, we don't. And then some people say we're trying to save us or trying to sustain humans. Well, that's true. But what does it take to sustain humans?
Ah, well, can a human be sustained without, let's say, a worm?
Warmth, you said?
A worm?
I don't know.
Well, what I'm thinking about is, okay, in order for us to have oxygen, to breathe, to survive, and in order to have potable water, which I guess none of us can survive as an organism more than 3 days without it, we need healthy plants, right?
Yep.
Well, what makes the plants healthy?
The soil.
And what makes the soil healthy?
Microbes and worms.
Oh, worms! So wait a minute. We may be dependent for our survival on the survival of that worm.
Well, in fact, our watershed systems, you know, the watersheds that feed New York City, for instance, or Boston, where I live, we are dependent on a big reservoir system that has surrounding thousands of acres of forest and wildland to filter the water that's falling from the air. Without that, we wouldn't have clean water.
So what you're essentially asking is, in fact, this is a great question, where does the water you drink come from?
Well, there's a system. So let's talk about that as a system. Can we do that?
Yeah. Where does the water you drink come from? The water, I'm drinking a glass of water right now that came out of my tap, right? Where'd that water come from?
So it comes from the rain.
Well, it's actually probably coming from the well that's in my backyard, right? It's way out here in the middle of the country.
So where does the well get its water?
Where does it get its water? Well, it gets it from the rain, of course. So,
and can you drink the rain anymore, though?
Well, now that's an interesting question. In the U.S., I don't know of any place that will allow you to do that because the departments of health say...
Well, it's polluted. It's dirty.
Oh, what's it polluted with?
Sulfur and nitrogen. I mean, what is it? Nitrates. I'm sorry, I have the wrong chemistry here.
Sulfur oxide and nitrogen oxide. And where does that come from?
Our power plants.
Oh, wait a minute. So there's a very strong connection between energy and water. La da da.
Yeah. But not only that, they're in the particulates in the air are captured. And so.
Oh, wait a minute. that then leads me to another question. You just told me that we're drinking rain, which I totally agree we are. But if rain falls on my roof and I can't drink it, that's rain too. But what the heck is the difference between the two? They're both rain. Now I'm confused.
Well, you're not drinking the rain directly from the sky or from a barrel on your roof. It actually is filtered through the ground. When you're drinking out of a well, that water is filtered through the ground. That water, that ground, has to be healthy ground. It can't be Love Canal soil or some EPA-protected site.
So we're back to the same question. What makes that ground healthy?
And what makes the ground healthy are the wild animals, bears crapping in the woods, pardon me, worms, microbes, leaf duff.
Well, and where does that, where a lot of that comes from, the plants being healthy enough to create deep enough root structure so that on an annual basis it can deteriorate, adding biological material to the soil to help feed the microbes that help eat the contaminants that are in the water as it drains down through that root system, so long as the root system's there to keep erosion from letting that water go elsewhere with sediments and other pollutants in it. So
we are dependent on healthy habitat for our healthy, clean water. We're also dependent on healthy habitat to make soil. And therein lies that shows you how valuable soil is for our survival as a species. Not only our survival, but all animals, all living things.
Bill, there was something you told me a while back that I really love, and I just can't remember it exactly, but you said something like, notwithstanding all of the great progress humans have made in the arts and sciences, none of it would mean anything without
an inch of topsoil.
An inch of topsoil and a little bit of rain.
Right. All of this comes, all of our lives come from an inch of topsoil and a little bit of rain.
Aha. So what this means, what you're telling me, is very simple. That what we're really doing in order to sustain ourselves is we must sustain all life.
And that's what sustainability comes right down to. So when we're talking about green buildings, really, we're talking about an opportunity to either intervene positively in the ecosystem that supports us or to intervene negatively. And that means not just what we do on the building itself, like the foundation and the envelope and the energy we use, but how the people in the building and how the planning of the building are actually engaged with the environment that surrounds us.
So in other words, I think what you're saying is there are systems and components of systems nested within larger systems that are then in turn nested within larger systems.
Well, yeah, let's talk. Buckminster Fuller used to say...
Now, hold on a sec. I think we have to take a break, and that's a great place to come back.
Okay, good.
So let's take a break, and you are listening to the Green Talk Network on Voice America.
Building Deeper Green.
Building Deeper Green. We'll see you in a minute.
Attention swimmers, get out of the water! Everybody, out of the water immediately!
Dude, is that... It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom who's been swimming a lot with her kids must have lost them.
Whoa, I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Are you thinking green? How do you make your home, family, and life green? Green Today with host Nelson Martinez aims to answer these questions and more. Look to the show as your guide to everything green, from the global movement to what's going on in your neighborhood. We can all do a little something to help our local environments and the planet as a whole by being smarter consumers and using products that are less harmful. Listen for Green Today with Nelson Martinez, Mondays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Green Talk Network.
In the great scheme of things, a minute isn't all that much, unless you happen to have a stroke. All of a sudden, those minutes count. Minutes that could mean losing your ability to talk, move, or walk. Which is why, if you can get help in time, your stroke can be treated. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face. If you experience this, call 911 immediately. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to the Green Talk Network. Help to spread the green by involving your family and friends. You're doing your part. Now help them think green. Spread the green. The Green Talk Network.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone, to Building Deeper Green with Bill Reed and John Becker. So, Bill, where we left off was an understanding, first and foremost, that what we're trying to do is sustain all life, right?
And that life is part of the whole system.
So we're trying to sustain life. That's what sustainability is. And that really is one whole system. In fact, we can take the S off systems all of a sudden. It's one whole system of nested systems all sort of within each other. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. So what's a nested system?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So we typically think about our building sites as having boundaries because that's the way we draw them. We have legal boundaries.
Property lines.
Property lines, sure. And so, but water doesn't know about a property line. Soil and animals don't know about a property line. And nature, for it to work, requires all these relationships between the soil and the worms and the foxes and the deer and the trees and the pollination and the honeybees to make life work. So when we're talking about a building, we also depend on gasoline and fuel oil and sun and water flow and waste treatment, etc. So there's never really a boundary around our building.
Okay. So what that means then is what...
And where do you, where, hold on, John, where do you draw the boundary?
Well, you could draw it at the watershed, you could draw it at the region, you could draw it at the country, you could draw it at the planet, you could, well, we could make an argument you could draw it at the universe, but...
Yeah, well, it's certainly the planet.
Certainly the planet. So I think, then, the system we're talking about is nature, life.
Yep.
And if we look at nature, what we can, I think, uncover in this discussion is that really all those different subsystems are operating in mutually beneficial reciprocal relationships.
Or they should be.
Are they?
If we get in the way, they aren't.
So is it just that humans are in the way?
If we're not conscious of our relationships out there, we can do silly things. And some of those silly things are building dams that stop fish migration. Or some of those silly things might be creating nuclear fallout in the atmosphere. Or maybe even building an interstate highway across a migratory path. If we're not aware of how these systems are working, we can, by pure accident, I wouldn't say that we're intentional about it, but we're intentionally ignorant, we can't address how those systems work.
All right, so here's a question. If, in fact, we can get in the way, couldn't the opposite also be true?
Well, that is, in fact, it used to be that way.
Participate. I mean, look, what keeps occurring to me over and over again is I'm a human that didn't create myself just like every one of these plants and animals didn't. We're all really part of nature, yeah?
Yeah.
So isn't it just as possible that the purpose of this human organism might be to indeed participate in sustaining the health of each of our places?
Well, in fact, if we aren't consciously engaged in doing that, we will probably make mistakes.
All right, so give me an example of being consciously aware of doing that.
Well, we can have, there's kind of three levels of consciousness that we have on our planet, I think. One is we can take it for what it's, we can abuse it to whatever level we feel like we, because it's ours, right? We can do with it what we will. If I want to wash my dirty clothes in the stream upstream of you, too bad, John, you're going to have to suffer the consequences of my dirty laundry or my human waste coming down into your site. So that's kind of taking the abuse. The other is neutral. So we can, it's basically the kind where most environmental activity takes place. We put nature in a park, and we say
I got that last time that the national park is kind of like a tree zoo.
Yeah, it's a tree zoo. We basically put nature in a park. We put a fence around it. We say to nature, effectively, you stay there, nature, and behave yourself while we go outside this fence and screw it up. So that's kind of a neutral attitude, basically conservation attitude. The other level is how do we actually become engaged as co-participants?
Co-evolutionary, yeah?
Yeah, co-evolutionary is another term that's frequently used by environmentalists. How do we become co-evolutionary? How do we actually participate in life so that we are contributing to its health as opposed to just occupying the land? In other words, how do we not just occupy the land, how do we inhabit the land?
The last time we kept talking about, most of what's currently happening in the environmental world is doing us less damage. What you are proposing, or I think, is pretty clear, and that is that we as members of nature can indeed use that membership by understanding it as such, and therefore actually contribute to the better health of the place. In fact, make it healthier.
Yeah, that's pretty hard for a lot of people to accept right now because we don't have a relationship.
Say more.
Well, we don't anymore. We used to.
That's right, because the statistics that I read tell us that Americans, for example, spend roughly 90% of our time indoors. Is that what you mean?
Right. And you read 1491? Talk about that a little, John.
Well, that one I think we're going to have to reserve for another show because that one's going to take a
little time. We'll summarize it in one sentence.
Actually, it's better to ask it as a question. When you were in junior high school, what were you taught about North America prior to European settlement? Was it A, in essence, an unoccupied Eden, or B, a deeply occupied, densely populated and developed place? A or B?
Most people would say A.
Yeah, that's certainly what I was taught.
But there's a catch. I can tell that there's a catch to that question.
Well, yeah. But 1491, a brilliant book in my mind, one of the most seminal books that I've read personally in the last decade or so, really makes the case, and quite compellingly, which I guess has been pretty much agreed upon now universally by anthropologists and historians and archaeologists, that it's far closer to B than it is to A. And the reason we don't think it is basically because within the period between when the explorers arrived and 80 years later when the settlers arrived, 90 or so percent of the indigenous populations of North and, by the way, South America were dead because of smallpox.
Yeah,
and
other
settlements had been built out of essentially wood and natural materials, and nature takes that back really fast. So in that 80-year period, there was very little evidence that there was anybody here, and what was remaining was easy to ignore in order to assuage the essentially guilt for unintended genocide.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is that for time out of mind, literally thousands of years, this place was being managed by humans.
Engaged with, and we know from many resources now that, yeah, there was a conscious understanding of how to interact with life that supports us.
All right, so we've only got a couple minutes left. So, with that understanding, and I think we're going to talk about this quite a bit more in the next couple of episodes, where do we go with this? How do we make that real? How can we, in fact, use that mindset in the real world of designing our buildings and places?
Well, that gets back to the third aspect of system, purpose. We talked about the fragments of a system, the pieces, the technologies, their interrelationships, and how being in interrelationship with each other, we can actually save money and have a higher environmental performance. The third is, what's the purpose of the system? So right now, what we've done is we've expanded the idea of systems thinking from just beyond a building to a whole system. When we engage in a building project, we are actually intervening on the planet in a more substantive way than almost anything else we do, except growing food and perhaps transportation.
Yeah, we have a whole bunch to talk about with food at a later episode.
So whether we're growing food or whether we're building transportation systems or we're building buildings, we have the opportunity to think about the larger purpose in which we're engaged, and that is to sustain life. So how do we take the opportunity of this engagement to begin to expand a level of consciousness and awareness and connectivity to those issues so that we can begin to create a whole system of health?
Well, that's the question. And in fact, that will be the topic of our next episode, indeed.
And actually quite a few.
Well, actually all of them, but specifically, what does it mean to sustain life, will be the fundamental topic of our next episode. And our purpose is to understand humans as nature. We'll have with us a great guest, Dr. Gerald Wilhelm from Conservation Design Forum. So with that said, we'll see you next week. But remember, to do different things, we need to do things differently.
And to do things differently, we have to think about them differently.
And to think differently, we need to be different.
See you all next week, all.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. Please join us again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Green Talk Network, and make it a great and greener weekend.